Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is a United States of Anxiety call-in special. I'm Brian Lehrer. Good evening, everyone. Tonight's edition is called I'll Give You That, Strategies for Thanksgiving Dinner. And the premise is, we know that if you celebrate Thanksgiving with a politically mixed family, next Thursday could be tougher to get through than an overcooked turkey. And we know that this is no joke. This is not like putting up with your cranky uncle or whiny kids in a normal year. For much of blue America, especially for many women and Muslims and people of color, this is about fear and grief and betrayal, about suspicion of bigotry and white nationalism, about concern for our democracy itself, with a president-elect who openly states his admiration for the authoritarian strength of leaders like Putin and Saddam Hussein, even if not for their atrocities per se. And for so many women, it's about the horrifying notion that a man is now president-elect who boasts about using the power of his celebrity to commit multiple sexual assaults, and maybe equally horrifying how too few other voters found that disqualifying. Now, if you voted for Trump, maybe you're feeling some glee that the free trade elites have been taken down from their Masters of the Universe mountain, maybe to stop shipping away manufacturing jobs just to make an extra buck. Maybe you feel we're getting off the mat to protect this country from terrorism without romanticized blinders about refugees. Maybe it's about race and gender, but in a way that has left you feeling like you're assumed to be racist or sexist if you have politically incorrect opinions on crime or immigration or the burden of proof in sexual assault allegations. And you think the other guys are so sanctimonious, precious snowflakes, as Kellyanne Conway put it, for protesting after an election that Trump won fair and square, and you're rolling your eyes. By the way, no eye rolling. That's one of the tips for getting through Thanksgiving that we'll get to as we go. So what we're going to try to do, now that we've laid out a little bit of listening to what both sides of you may be thinking, what we're going to try to do this hour is give you some tools for the holiday that apply no matter what your politics are. And maybe your politically mixed family can even be a model for a fracturing America. Let's see if we can do some high-stress community building this hour. Joining me now are Mary Harris, host of the WNYC podcast, Only Human. She's got a project for you to do over Thanksgiving weekend and report back on. George Yancey, philosophy professor at Emory University, who was quoted in a New York Times article this week on speaking openly and listening openly and why he would bother to talk to a white supremacist about race. And Henry Alford, journalist and humorist who has a manners column in the New York Times and has written for Vanity Fair and other things. Hi, Mary. Hi, Henry. Hi, Professor Yancey.
Hey, Brian.
Hello.
Hello.
And let me be the first to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. If it is a happy Thanksgiving, Mary, to the title of your show, how is your project asking people to be only human?
Well, so I started thinking about this because last year the podcast did this listening project where we gave people a 5-day boot camp to be better listeners. And I started listening back to it and realizing just how apropos it is right now, how much we need to think about how we should be listening to each other better. So the project that we're doing is we are asking people to call in to this show today and to the newsroom and to let us know how you're feeling about this Thanksgiving conversation. And we want to keep in touch with you. We really see this Thanksgiving conversation as the beginning of 4-8 years of talking, of dialogue, and we want to kickstart that today.
So let me start the act of listening by restating what you said there to reinforce it for people who might call in right now. Is anything about the election making you anxious about Thanksgiving because of who's going to be there in your politically mixed family? 212-433-WNYC. That's basically it, right?
That's it.
And what's underlying the anxiety, listeners? Is it something about the state of the country? Maybe something about your place in this country and how you might see it as having changed? Or how people judge you for voting for whoever you voted for? 212-433-9692. We'll save some lines for Clinton voters, some lines for Trump voters, and maybe other. And how are you coping with your Thanksgiving anxieties? Are you planning to hold your tongue and maybe hold your breath for all of Thanksgiving dinner, planning to give the relatives who need to hear it a piece of your mind because, hey, you're a person in the world and you count too? Or how else have you been coping that you might carry with you over the river and through the woods? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I'll add one more thing. It's the title of this hour. I'll give you that. If you're feeling embittered and antagonistic, you go first to state a thing that you'll give someone from the other political side. What might that thing be? 212-433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, Professor Yancey, have you really tried to engage white supremacists on the topic of race rather than just tell them where they can put their hateful selves?
I certainly have. I wrote a piece called Dear White America for The Stone in New York Times. It's a site where philosophers get to write. And I wrote a very controversial piece called Dear White America. And in that piece, I more or less try to talk about my own sexism as a way of disarming white supremacists or even white people who don't really understand the ways in which their whiteness is a site of privilege. And what happened is, of course, I got a huge volume of white racist vitriol. The alt-right picked up on it. I received letters. I had to have police presence in my classrooms. The FBI got involved. So that's what I was trying to do. And I think part of it is pedagogical. I try to teach my students that they have to engage in what's called fearless speech. It comes from a Greek word, paresia, which means courageous speech or fearless speech, but I also teach them at the same time that they have to engage in what I call fearless or courageous listening, to have oneself transformed by the voice of the other.
Yeah, and you were quoted saying it sometimes takes a painful step to approach common ground. Was saying that you're sexist the painful step?
It was a very painful step, partly to make it public, right? This was sort of my way of coming out as a sexist, to say, hey, look, I benefit from male patriarchy and from androcentricity and all of these things in ways that I don't even intend to. So it's not as if I hate women. It's not as if I somehow physically abuse them. But yet I'm part of a structure, a systemic structure in which women are oppressed within that system. Yeah. So it was very painful,
but,
sure.
But does that work in talking to a white supremacist? Because in a way it doesn't give them anything. Not that you should, you know, accommodate white supremacist thinking per se in any way. But it just, you know, says, well, yeah, I'm also guilty of one of these isms from my position of power as a man. Does that disarm a white supremacist in any way?
Yeah, sure, and that's an interesting question. I think what I disarmed are probably more white people who didn't think about themselves as occupying a site of racism, as opposed to the white supremacists who actually sent me hate mail through the alt-right. Yeah.
So
I think there's a level of stubbornness beyond which, you know, one can't reach.
So can you say, and I'm putting you on the spot because, you know, we thought of this title for this show, and I wonder if you can model it spontaneously. Can you say, I'll give you that about something, anything, to a Trump voter? You want to think about it?
Yes, only one thing.
Okay.
You want me to state
it? I'm only asking for one. Yeah.
Okay. The one thing is that America in general has failed to be attentive to the ways in which the working class whites have suffered.
Okay. That's a good start. Henry Alford, I see you wrote an article two Thanksgivings ago with Thanksgiving tips from crisis negotiators. This year has got to be worse than 2014. What led you to write an article like that back then?
Well, my own family is very lovely in a public gathering, but so many other families that I hear about have what sound almost like football scrimmages subtitled by David Mamet when they convene at the Thanksgiving table. So I knew that people who talk to kidnappers and arsonists would have a lot of useful information.
Yeah, in that article you quoted a board member of the Michigan Association of Hostage Negotiators. That's what Thanksgiving is coming to, OMG, lessons from hostage negotiators. And one of the tips was to say you're sorry when you're not sorry.
Yeah.
So really?
This guy, Chris Voss, who was the lead negotiator, lead international negotiator for the FBI, told me that he does that in his personal life, that if you, as it were, put your back on the floor and your belly up in the air and your proverbial genitals on display, that you...
That's proverbial male genitals.
Well, male or female. But if you show your vulnerability in a conversation,
yes,
that people's shoulders will instantly lower.
Yes.
That they will start listening. I don't know if, vis-a-vis this election, it needs to be an actual apology, but I do think a comment like, oh, boy, well... it's a pity that us Democrats didn't come up with a more electable candidate. That's a starting point to me for a conversation rather than, you don't want to go right for Trump's love for Muslims, say.
Right. Quote, unquote, love.
Quote, unquote, love.
So that's your example into the pile of I'll give you that?
That's a version of I'll give you that.
All right. With us briefly is one version, a woman with one version of Thanksgiving self-protection. She is Nancy Sundin, a social worker in Spokane, Washington, who canceled her Thanksgiving dinner. Maybe you saw that reference to her in the Times. Thanks for coming on with us, Nancy. I'm sure it's not easy, and I imagine you're feeling some sadness over deciding you needed to make this choice. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what was your Thanksgiving going to be, and why did you call it off? Yeah.
Well, I come from a really close family, and talking politics is kind of a normal thing for our family. With my dad's employment growing up, it was kind of a normal thing. And, I've always listened to my brother and my dad banter about politics and generally just kind of ignored it. But the last couple weeks were particularly difficult, and I asked my family to stop talking politics, and they kept going and chose not to respect my wishes. And my husband and I just decided that our children value what my parents say very much, and we feel like this would be really confusing. For two reasons. We feel like it would be confusing because we talk to them about what's important to us, so listening to them, say things that are different than what we've taught them. But also it preserves us, too, because we don't want to get into a position where we have bad memories for our children, arguments between family members, and our emotions are really raw and we're really hurt over what we've seen, as an outcome for our nation. So,
can I ask, how old are your kids?
Yeah, I have a 13-year-old boy. He's almost 14. And I have a twin 7-year-old.
And you don't even want them exposed to what your parents might say?
I think it's not that I don't want them exposed. I want them exposed to everything. I think it's the, like I say, my parents aren't just Trump supporters. They're the kind that are, for lack of a better word, obnoxious and don't stop when asked to I think they don't really understand where my children are developmentally and what's appropriate. And they just haven't respected that. So,
Henry, I think you take the position, if you want to say anything to Nancy, that sad as it is, there are times when it's a good thing to disengage from some of your loved ones for a while.
Absolutely. I think there's nothing wrong with saying we're going to spend Thanksgiving by ourselves this year, you know. Or alternatively, there's a way to say to your group, hey, let's have a political conversation after the meal. Whoever wants to do that, let's meet in the living room at 5 o'clock, bring some Band-Aids and Kleenex. Because I think what happens much more often than things getting ugly, which I think is a very small percentage of families where it's actually going to – you're going to experience vitriol and name-calling. But I think what will happen very, very often is that two or three people will dominate the conversation, that the Beyoncé of your Thanksgiving table will emerge and all of us other Rihannas and Frank Oceans will be staring at the gravy boat.
George, I think, and they'll argue about whether to submit their albums for the Music Awards this year.
Exactly.
George, I think maybe you lean more toward engagement in general. Any competing advice for Nancy?
Yeah. Hi, Nancy. It's hard. I mean, again, this notion of paresia and speaking fearlessly and listening fearlessly, I think those things are so important. And they're especially important when we're talking about family, like people who we actually love, right? But I'm going to have to agree with Nancy here, and partly why I need to agree with her, because I had a student who divulged in class that he had voted for Donald Trump. And so there was this tension and this silence in class. There was no vitriol because I've already established a framework for this fearlessness all around listening and speaking. But he shared with us that some of his relatives were not going to come home for Thanksgiving precisely because he was there and he had voted for Trump. And let's think about it. I mean, Thanksgiving is a time where presumably it's a kind of celebration for blessing of the harvest, right? And some of us see, this including myself, see this harvest as really a curse, right? So there's ways in which, and I can only imagine what it's like for me to be a woman or to be a sister or brother or an undocumented immigrant or I am African-American or disabled person, and you find out that your friend or your family member voted for Trump when there is so much, unlike, as far as I'm concerned, any other election, there's so much that's on the line existentially. So a vote for Trump, if that's like an existential threat, then it's going to be really difficult to even deploy what I'm calling fearless listening or fearless speech.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's so intense. Nancy, if I was your dad, is there anything you could say to me that starts with, I'll give you that, to break the tension and warm up the vibe?
Gosh, I'll give you that. Let me think. Well, it would probably not relate to the election, more like...
Oh, it has to relate to the election.
Oh, goodness. I can't think of anything.
I mean, it doesn't have to relate to Donald Trump as a person. I realize I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
But about the country or what underlying values or fears or crises.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so what I've learned, I think, by doing lots of talks over the last week and, you know, talking with people who I have found out are Trump supporters is really, I think it's an order of values, and my order of values is different. So what I'll give is that their order of values is different, and I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a start. Well, maybe next Thanksgiving, huh, Nancy?
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I realize this is not easy, but it might actually help other listeners that you shared it, so we really appreciate it. It's a United States of Anxiety call-in special. We'll continue in a minute.
This is a special post-election call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC and the nation's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. You can hear the entire United States of Anxiety series at WNYC.org/anxiety
and leave a comment letting us know what's on your mind during this divisive time. United States of Anxiety is also available as a podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on the WNYC app.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
What if millions of Black Americans had been compensated for slavery? Join me, Trymaine Lee, as I explore the untold story of one of the only Black Americans who ever was. I talk to his descendants and discuss how reparations forever changed their family's trajectory and imagine a reality where reparations are paid to the rest of Black America. Into America presents Uncounted Millions, The Power of Reparations, a Black History Month series. New episodes drop Thursdays. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a United States of Anxiety call-in special. Live this hour, I'm Brian Lehrer. This series of specials will continue Monday and Tuesday, by the way, with Ilya Marritz Monday night and Anna Sale on Tuesday with different topics. Tonight, it's I'll Give You That, Strategies for Thanksgiving Conversations in Your Politically Mixed Families.
I had a very unfortunate situation with my father-in-law where he ended up just screaming at us about you people and progressives, and so we would never do anything to sever a tie with our family, but it's created a real quandary in our family of how do you go forward from there and what do you talk about instead.
What you do is you take out your smartphone and you find the stopwatch function and you say to your family, we're going to hear everybody out, but we're giving it 45 minutes, and you'll do it before dinner, and it'll be set, and it'll be dignified, and it'll be ugly, and when the timer goes off, you put it aside, and you dine, and you talk about what you are grateful for.
La-di-da. Two of the callers to the Only Human Thanksgiving Day Reconciliation Project. Those listeners were pre-recorded. You can call us live on the air right now. Listeners, what are your anxieties about Thanksgiving, and how are you preparing, or how are you solving the problem? Our lines are full at the moment. When we get through some callers, it's 212-433-WNYC. And with us are Mary Harris, host of our Only Human podcast, Emory University philosophy professor George Yancey, and New York Times manners columnist Henry Alford. And also with us now is Colin Woodard, author of American Nations, A History of Cultural Divides in the United States. Colin, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
My pleasure to join you.
And you see the United States as made up, in a way, of 11 separate nations. Just the idea of that makes me exhausted. But how does it apply to how fractured we are over the election of Donald Trump?
Well, it applies to almost all of our political fractures throughout our history, because we're a federation composed of very different regional cultures, nations really, each of them dating back and tied back to the differences between the different colonial clusters that formed on the eastern and southern rims of the country. And it shaped all kinds of things, including the electoral map that you see, especially if you zoom down to the county level in this election this month.
People keep saying this is unprecedented, this election, and this feeling, including that democracy itself might be threatened. George, before the break, was articulating the intensity of, you know, how so many people feel this is an existential threat to them or to their group or to the country. Can you think of parallels in American history to the emotion that we've been experiencing as a nation the last week?
Certainly not in living memory. I mean, I think you would have to go back to the 19th century for some of those feelings. I am sure that when Abraham Lincoln was elected and the country was, headed towards the Civil War, that there must have been, similar and perhaps quite a bit greater anxieties and concerns about the future of the Republic. And maybe even, in the era when Andrew Jackson was taking over and bringing a very different kind of democracy than had been accustomed to in the earlier period of American history. But it is certainly unprecedented, in living memory, yeah, or what we would call modern times.
And you've said multiculturalism as a value for liberals clashes with feeling among some older residents that their own communities are becoming harder for them to understand even as they live there. Is that a contemporary problem? I mean, no one used the word multiculturalism until maybe 50 years ago, I don't think. Or does this, too, have deeper roots?
Yeah, well, my central argument isn't exactly that, but rather that ideas like multiculturalism, like the idea that you would have different people from different cultures maybe coming and retaining their identity and their language and publishing newspapers and having schools in their language, living side by side, each in a checkerboard of neighborhoods or in a checkerboard of different towns and landscape in places like Iowa, you have a Venus town, and then you have a German pietist town, and then you have a Czech town, and everyone basically gets along, that is the normal model. There are certain parts of the country where that is the norm and where that idea of a mosaic is the standing and real idea of what America is. And then there are other parts of the country where that was not the standing idea. I mean, in sort of New England and very upper tier of the Northeast and Midwest that was essentially colonized by New Englanders and their descendants in the early period, and the institutions were laid down by them and the cultural assumptions, the idea was not that. It was a melting pot. The idea that, people can come from the outside world, but they must become like us. I mean, that's a very different approach. Mm-hmm. So these things go way back, and they're competing ideas about what America should be and American identity, and they're tied, and this is sort of unfortunate for the Electoral College and maybe the Thanksgiving table, they're tied to geography.
George, you have anything for Colin Woodard?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a part of that story I'd like to challenge, particularly the idea of this standing idea. It depends on who's telling that meta-narrative, and quite frankly, black people, and as someone who is embodied as black, I've never thought about America as this kind of multiculturalism or a kind of ideal. Sure, it's a very fragile democratic experience, but black people have always been deemed ersatz and inferior and problems, as Du Bois might say. So I would like to check that narrative and just to say that, again, the idea of bringing difference wasn't part of the black narrative. Coming across the Middle Passage, being sold as chattel, wasn't a kind of acceptance. And even in the case of the Irish and Jews and Italians vis-a-vis Anglo-Saxons, there wasn't a great deal of acceptance there. In many, many ways, Jews, the Irish and Italians, they had to become white. They had to give up a certain kind of culture in order to fit in and thereby becoming white, right? So there are ways in which certain kinds of bodies, and I'm speaking here of black bodies from my own experience, and recent history in terms of the death and killing of black bodies by the police, by the state, and their proxies, there are ways in which we have always been deemed contaminants within the American imaginary.
Colin?
Oh, I wouldn't disagree with anything that you're saying. It's that the dominant cultures that the experience that outsiders and immigrants and African Americans have had to confront and interact with and negotiate with, the parameters of those dominant societies are very different based on these regional differences tying way back into the 17th and 18th century that I'm describing. But everything you say is absolutely true. I'm saying the framework that one confronts would be different based on which piece of geography you're in.
Colin, before you go, and we go back to some callers, putting this in the context of the deep history, the sort of 11 nations within our nation, as you do, does that mean that because of the way our country was founded, we're doomed to repeat these divisions forever and ever until the Earth warms so much we all have to move to Mars?
I think
Stephen Hawking said 1,000 years this week, by the way. Then we all have to move.
really slowly. I mean, of course, if you go back in human history, you know, cultures, you know, and nations really do come and go. I mean, Byzantium's influence has largely disappeared from the map of Europe and the Middle East, although if you really, you know, scratch there, it's still there. But, you know, things, you know, Mesopotamia is gone, but it takes a long time. These things are very sticky. So I would never say never. But we are, it is something that we've had to confront throughout our history and has affected, you know, the battle lines of everything from, you know, the what colonies joined which side in the English Civil War in the 1640s to the divides almost down to the congressional district level and the key votes leading to the Civil War and almost any hotly contested presidential election in our history. You see the same fissures. You don't see them on the state map, by the way. You have to look down at the county level because that's where you can really capture the difference in these competing settlement flows and the institutions they brought with them. So it's been part of the American experience all along. It's that at different phases in our history, we've been able to form sort of coalitions of these regional cultures large enough to, you know, kind of have a consensus to run the levers of federal power in Washington mm-hmm. and carry on with things. And that has not been the case in the past couple of decades.
Colin Woodard, author of American Nations, A History of Cultural Divides in the United States. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And now back to our callers on what your anxieties are about Thanksgiving and how you're preparing or how you're solving the problem if the election and what it's doing to your family is the problem. Francisco in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, thank you, Ryan. I love your show. Thank you for having me. To address your question, well, you know, I think that I just want to mention that I've been a Democrat all my life, and I just changed to Republican. Obviously, I voted for Trump, and my entire family voted for Hillary, and there's obviously going to be some anxiety, you know, at the dinner table this Thanksgiving. I'm going to be, of course, the outlier, the one that, you know, people are going to be looking at and they're going to be probably pointing their fingers at me and going to want to continue to pick my brain as to why would I, you know, betray them. But I think that, you know, given that, I'm just going to try to keep to myself, you know, and if they're going to pull me into a conversation, you know, or, you know, even start an argument as to why it happened and why it did change, you know, I'm going to really say, you know, I think this anxiety is you know, it's overblown because, you know, I our media, you know, keeps on insisting, you know, like for example, your show, for example, keeps on insisting that there's going to be anxiety.
Random example,
you know, and I think that's just continues to perpetuate the anxiety.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's, you know, it's just something, you know, that concerns me as a person who, you know, wants to find unity and common ground between the differences in our, you know, fragile democracy, as people keep on saying. I don't think it's that fragile. I think we have more in common than we don't. So I just feel that, you know, if a conversation starts up, you know, I'm going to really try to say, hey, you know, look, you know, I think that we all want the best for our country. I think we got to give Trump a chance, you know, and let's hope for the best, you know, and stop trying to say that he's, you know, continue using like these really strong words that, like, he's a bigot, you know, he's a misogynist, he's you know, he's a racist, you know, he's in, you know, all these things that are going to continue to inflate the heads of people who don't agree with him as being our president.
So, Henry, step in here, because I'm imagining Francisco's relatives in this situation that he described, where he's the outlier as the Trump supporter, and they're saying, but he is a bigot.
Yeah.
He is a racist. What about the time he said this and the time he said that?
Yeah, right.
And you're going to tell me everything's just going to be okay?
Right. We potentially have the seeds of a dangerous bloom here. But what I'm hearing from Francisco is that Francisco is smart enough to read the room. So I think he's going to know what kind of response he's going to get. And I think that, as soon as he sees that there is that someone's hackles are raised, then Francisco's got to back off a little bit. But I agree with you, Brian. When I heard Francisco say that he was going to come in and say that the anxiety is overblown, that's a pretty strong sentiment at the dinner table. But again, if you've read the room and you know that your people can handle that, then go with God.
Francisco, can you handle going on with another caller who's a Clinton supporter? And let's see if we can create a little dialogue here. Let's put on Sharon. Is it Sharon in Teaneck? Sharon?
Yes, Sharon.
Oh, Sharon.
Yes.
Hi there.
And you're Thank you so much for having me.
With everybody. Thank you so much for calling. How would you start to articulate what you're anxious about regarding Thanksgiving and the election?
Well, my parents both voted for Trump. My mother really enthusiastically, and my father, he said, holding his nose. But they're very involved in the Jewish community, and they're educated and informed, and I can't understand the way that their minds work. My mother said to me, if you would only listen to Michael Savage more and Brian Lehrer less, you would learn the truth. And I said, I don't think so, Mom. And really, I think that their issue was more that they were voting against Clinton than for Trump. And I can't even understand, like, I can't wrap my brain around how you can vote for a misogynist, angry, xenophobic person and not vote, you know, and be so against what Hillary stands for. So, like, when you were asking, you know, what could I, like, say, okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. Like, I could understand Hillary is a flawed candidate, but I can't understand support for and glee at his election.
By the way, now I have an issue with your parents. Anybody who says to listen to my show less, Thanksgiving is off. Thanksgiving is off. I'm sorry, it's over. Francisco, you want to practice a little bit since you're going to be the odd man out at your Thanksgiving dinner? Saren, meet Francisco. Francisco, meet Saren. You're now brother and sister.
Okay, Sharon, look, you know, I completely understand, you know, your position. There are definitely things that Trump has done historically, you know, throughout his life that, you know, of course, the whole, boy talk in the locker room, you know, that came out, you know, in a timely fashion during the election, you know, all these ladies that came out during the election and never before did. That they were, abused in some way, you know. But, you know, and then he's, you know, he's mentioned things like, you know, that concern, you know, Americans, that actually concern me. But, you know, the fact is that I think that the whole American population that voted for him, we're actually looking for a serious change in our government, because our government has really, you know, have been really just doing a lot of talking, and it doesn't really feel like it's doing anything for, like, I guess, the working class American, who find themselves unemployed and have given up on trying to look for a job. And there's the middle class is shrinking, and I don't know, you know, where you consider yourself on the spectrum, but,
well,
you know, I'm definitely, yeah.
My parents are quite comfortable, affluent Jewish Americans. So,
right.
Like, I don't think that they're in that working class. They're not worried about that. For them, it was really just they hated Hillary. And so that was their take. And to me, like, the hate for Hillary is more of the why we're having trouble talking to each other than, you know, all that other stuff. Because mm-hmm. we're fine.
I give everybody a chance, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I give everybody a chance. I listen to Brian a lot, and I do listen, you know, to Savage, you know, Nation, you know, every now and then. You know, I watch CNN, I watch the Fox channels, and I listen to all sides of the arguments. I'm not trying to say I'm the ideal, you know, American citizen who tries to take all the points of views and try to really evaluate what's going on out there before I make a statement. Yeah. You know, but, you know, I really, you know, feel that we got to give Trump a chance, see where it's going to go. Try to, you know, and, you know, I know it's hard for people, but, you know, try to, you know, not go by using those heavy, you know, words like misogynist, you know, xenophobic, you know. What are you really afraid of that's foreign?
And, you know, I'm afraid of the people that he just appointed today. Jeff Sessions? I mean, that's not exactly somebody who is going to fight for the rights of all Americans.
Right, we have a lot of cabinet positions that have to be filled. So we know it hasn't ended
yet.
You know, the three are very important, positions.
Right.
And, you know, I'll be your, you know, strong Republican conservatives, but, you know, let's see what happens.
A
now we got him talking at the same time. Pass the stuffing. Francisco in Bloomfield and Sharon and Tina, thank you both very much for engaging. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, oh, and hold on, both of you. We want to take your contact information off the air, if that's okay, to see about maybe using you later on in the project. So, George Yancey, I was thinking listening to them kind of get, you know, increasingly heated, and they had the polite context of being strangers in real life and just talking on a radio show. If the bottom line at Thanksgiving dinner is don't blow it up, avoid creating a scene, does that mean the only goal has to be coexistence and persuasion, like we just heard them both trying to engage in, is out?
Yeah, they're not. And the thing is, they're not related. Right. And we heard that conflict. I mean, we've been talking about political differences, but I think we also have to keep in mind that there are also racial differences where, you know, people could be there's a mixed race family or an individual who happens to be gendered in a particular kind of way or queered in a particular kind of way or disabled. So there are those individuals who are not queer or not disabled or who are white in this case who may have voted for Trump, who have to that conversation. I'm suggesting the dynamics mm-hmm. would be very different. Mm-hmm. But I think that I mean, I didn't hear the possibility of any reconciliation, particularly in Francisco's insistence regarding things being overblown. I mean, to begin that way is already to, in some sense, place under erasure. Was it Sharon?
Yes.
To place under erasure Sharon, the integrity of Sharon's feelings of just the rage of someone who is in fact, I mean, this is the problem, right? Who is in fact a racist, a sexist, homophobe, and ableist. Right. I mean, it's Islamophobic. And given what he's creating, I mean, with Michael Flynn, right, who said that fear of Muslims is rational, or our dear friend Steve Bannon, or even Mike Pence, who believes that, you know, conversion therapy is something that's good. Right. I guess what I'm suggesting is that maybe people should agree on Thanksgiving not to discuss this issue. And maybe I'm projecting my own identity into that, right? Even as I believe in fearless speech and fearless listening, I'm gonna restate what I said earlier. Mm-hmm. There is something that's deeply existentially at stake. And the more I heard Francisco speak, the more I thought that he was really obfuscating and sort of belittling the very gravity of this situation.
Henry, you want to get in on this as the manners columnist?
Sure. Well, I think that we're lucky that Francisco and Sharon were talking in a vacuum, as it were. I think if we put that into an actual dining room, what I thought was – I thought two things. One is – I think that hosts really want to ration alcohol this Thanksgiving. I think you want to treat alcohol like a rare and precious elixir. I think you want to spray the Pinot Grigio into the air and let your guests walk into the cloud. And then secondly, a thing that kept coming up in conversations with hostage negotiators and conflict resolution experts was something called track to diplomacy. And that's where you bring in actors from outside the society, from outside a formal talk, and you bring them into the situation to build confidence and trust. So in the example of a Thanksgiving, that might be the cousins who everybody likes come in and put on a skit. That kind of diversion tactic is going to create a lot of goodwill in the room, and I think that could really help you.
It's the United States of Anxiety call-in special on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute.
This is a special post-election call-in episode of the United States of Anxiety, WNYC and the nation's election series that documents the experiences and perspectives that informed voters and their choice for president. You can hear the entire United States of Anxiety series at WNYC.org/anxiety and leave a comment letting us know what's on your mind during this divisive time. United States of Anxiety is also available as a podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on the WNYC app.
It's the United States of Anxiety call-in special on WNYC this hour. I'm Brian Lehrer. Tonight it's I'll Give You That, Strategies for Thanksgiving Conversations in Your Politically Mixed Families. What are your anxieties about Thanksgiving and how are you preparing? 212-433-WNYC with Mary Harris from our Only Human podcast, Emory University philosophy professor George Yancey, and New York Times Manners columnist Henry Alford. And Mary in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Brian. I've been listening to the show. I work at the United Nations International School, and our school has been reeling from the election with a lot of kids upset. And I've been thinking about the trip to Thanksgiving. I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm going to go out and see relatives there. And I just learned that my favorite cousins voted for Trump, and I was beyond shocked, and I don't know if I can talk, I don't think that I'm going to bring up anything, but it may be brought up at the table, and I'm so passionate about what happened that. Do I get up and walk away? Do I go into the kitchen? Because part of it is, you know, I'm trying to sort of, I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really heavy lift. I might give the anxiety over ISIS and, you know, just but marginally, but the Muslim registry, I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And I was listening to your previous caller talking about how we should give Trump a chance, you know, and this is what my cousins may say. And I want to say, did you give Obama a chance? Did you, Mitch McConnell, the first thing that comes out of his mouth is our top priority is to make Obama a one-term president.
Yeah.
And so then you turn around and say, give him a chance, and everything that has been done subsequently with the transition team, it just like the anxiety never kind of goes away, and I guess I can try to listen, you know. I guess I can say, you know, to try to lower my shoulders. By the way, I read George Yancey's article. I sent him an email, and I totally agreed with him. By the way,
oh, so thank you.
So it was fabulous. And you know, I admit my own biases, and I agree with you. I think all men are sexist, and I think a lot of white folks have no idea about the privilege, but that's a whole other conversation. But maybe if I lower my shoulders and I really say, okay, I really, really, really want to know why you voted for Trump and see if I can sort of breathe through that.
So you have a tool for Mary, George, since she's a reader and a fan?
Yeah, as Mary was talking, I was empathizing with her, and as I think she what I'm hearing is she might very well be bigger than I would be, because part of the fracturing of the relationship would be the closeness with which, because you define them as your favorite cousins.
These are my dear cousins. I had Christmas with them, and you know, we're a Greek Orthodox family, so Greek Easter's with them, and you know, the whole nine yards.
Maybe there's a way in which, I don't know, as I'm hearing more, maybe people can just decide, opt out of talking about this on, I mean, sort of an agreement that you will not talk about this on Thanksgiving, knowing what you do know, and trying to accentuate what it is that makes this cousin, your favorite cousin prior to the election, you know? And maybe it's that kind of love and that kind of respect that can sustain the difference, right? If we just decide, let's bracket this out and let's just accentuate what we love about each other. I mean, that may sound a bit corny, but maybe it's the thing to do.
Maybe it's where you have to retreat to. Mary Harris, you want to get in on this?
Yeah, you know, I want to say, listening to George, I'm really surprised. You know, you're such an advocate for fearless listening, and to hear you say, you know, maybe not this year is very surprising to me. And I think for these families, we're really seeing this as like the beginning of years of conversation about this. This is such the long game. And so, okay, there's this cooling off period, but how do you build empathy over the next months and years that these families will need to do?
Yeah, actually, what I'm saying doesn't contradict my notion of fearless listening. I'm only suggesting that we bracket that during Thanksgiving and have that conversation perhaps later. Because, I mean, I think fearless listening is very important, but when the emotions are incredibly high and when there's so much to risk, you might want to sort of mechanically create a space for that where fearless listening, and we'll say, look, what we're going to do today is fearlessly listen and fearlessly speak, right? And while it sounds mechanical, we're creating a context for the possibility of that mutual flourishing.
And some parameters just by defining it like that. So also joining us is Tom in Westchester, a Trump supporter. Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you. And you're on with Mary in Manhattan and our guests. Go ahead. What's your anxiety for this Thanksgiving? What's your context?
Well, it all started last Wednesday morning when I woke up and realized that Trump had won. And my own excitement, I had to bottle that up and keep it inside and walk on eggshells around my wife, and then realize that, uh-oh, Thanksgiving's coming, and her parents are coming over, and her mom is a tremendous free supporter.
Hillary supporter. And?
Yes.
So do you have an approach yet?
I'm sorry?
Do you have an approach for when you see your mother-in-law?
I believe we're all just going to have to lay our cards on the table and talk it out. I mean, I can't believe some of these people are actually canceling Thanksgiving. This isn't about Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is an American tradition. It's a heritage. It's something we should hold dear. And canceling Thanksgiving just seems out of the question. Let's embrace our differences and talk it out and talk about these things and talk it through. And we can all come to a reasonable understanding, just like people who were against Barack Obama had to come to a reasonable understanding and say, all right, let's give him a shot. Let's give him a chance and see what happens.
Except
and everything turned out okay.
Yeah, but you didn't. Yeah, so there. But you didn't give Barack Obama a chance, from my point of view. And as I said earlier, that's the first thing that came out of McConnell's mouth. Our top priority is to make Obama one-term president. He's a Muslim. His birth certificate, he wasn't born in this country. So I feel like that, I hear what you're saying, but I feel like that's disingenuous. Because from my point of view, I don't feel that Obama got a shred of a chance. And he was blocked and vilified at every turn. And now that we've come full circle, and I hear people saying, "Well, give Trump a chance, give Trump a chance, give Trump a chance." So, you know, you say, "Nah, you were awful to my guy, and now I'm going to be awful to your guy," or does that not move the conversation forward? So that's kind of where I am when I hear that from Trump supporters. I just go, wait, you know, where were you for 8 years with Obama?
How you doing there, Tom?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I just asked how you're doing.
I'm doing fine with this. I love getting the difference of opinions and hearing other people's points of view, and it makes for a very interesting conversation.
Do you want to respond in content to Mary, or what if this was your? What if Mary was your mother-in-law, and was saying that, and she was as passionate as that? How would you come back and not blow up Thanksgiving?
and not screw up Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be the test. That's going to be the test. I'm going to have to make the gin and tonics a little extra strong.
Oh, Henry was saying go the other way, less alcohol. Henry, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me that this particular Thanksgiving has raised the ante for manners so high, which is to say, something that I always advocate before you go to a family gathering is, or something that I do is, I will turn to my boyfriend and say, "What college does my nephew go to?" Because I can't remember this stuff. And I think that this year, this is a perfect opportunity for that. If you want to know the cast of players beforehand and know stuff about them, so that when you do come into these situations where you're having these hugely opposing points of view, you have other stuff to focus on. Mm-hmm. If Minnesota Mary's favorite cousin wants to have this conversation with her, great. And if they can do it in a civil way, great. And if everyone else at the dinner table wants to do that, terrific. But if any of those things is not all clear, then I think you need to rely on other stuff. You need to be able to have great general conversations that aren't going to rile people up, because we're all wounded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mary and Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
For engaging. And hang on, both of you, if you would, so we can get contact information off the air, if you're willing, for possible follow-up. I want to sneak in Karen in West Milford, because I think she's got a recommended distraction here for families that are going to go through what our callers anticipate going through. Karen, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What you got?
Great. Love your show. 2 weeks ago, we recently purchased a little chocolate lab and for my mom and dad's house for us. But when we go to my mom and dad's, I really want to bring the puppy as a distraction, because we really cannot discuss the vote that took place in a civil way, like your guest had talked about, with manners and being respectful. And with my parents being older, there's that fear that, something could happen to them if they get so upset, angry at me for being a Hillary supporter. And it's also, I find, moving forward, disturbing that what Trump stands for, they voted for when I was not raised that way.
And how much can the puppy diffuse of that?
I'm hoping it's just a distraction for us to focus on something that's cute and adorable and getting outside and not drinking so much, maybe around the Thanksgiving table and bringing it the topic to fruition.
Karen, thank you very much. We're just about out of time, but George, I mean, we hear from even these friendly callers who, are engaging with each other in a pretty benign way. Just what you were saying before, which I already know and I think the whole country knows, this is intense.
Yes.
This is an existential moment, as you put it, certainly for people who are horrified by Trump. And maybe the pattern of what we've heard from Trump voters is, come on, it's not so bad. And that's actually the split. It's come on, it's not so bad versus, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And we have 30 seconds.
Oh, from what I've heard and what you've said, I think I'm going to say that the level of empathy, it might be more unilateral. I think it has to come from Trump voters. Because after all, I'm going to say again, he is a sexist, he is a racist, he is a xenophobe. I don't think we can dispute that. And
of course, that's not a mediator's position. That's at Thanksgiving.
That's right. And I think that maybe bringing the puppy in might make a difference. It might help to alleviate that sense of betrayal that Karen was talking about, and that feeling of being wounded. And I think what has to happen is you have to accent, and I still believe in fearless listening, but accent those things that you love about that individual first, at least on Thanksgiving.
George Yancey and Henry Alford, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Mary Harris, you want to tell people how they can take part in your Thanksgiving project for the Only Human podcast?
Yeah, give us a call. Tell us what's going on in your Thanksgiving world, 855-869-9692. That's 855-869-9692.
Give that number one more time, because that's not our usual call-in number.
Sure. 855-869-9692. Leave us a message.
And you'll come on my 10 a.m. show the Monday after Thanksgiving with some results, right?
We'll let you know how it went.
This series of United States of Anxiety call-in specials will continue Monday and Tuesday, with Ilya Meretz hosting on Monday night and Anna Sale on Tuesday. I'm Brian Lehrer. Stay tuned for On the Media coming up next.
Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.